Okay. Good morning. February 17th, 2026. Welcome everyone. We're in the cozy stage of Northern California winter. Although I did manage to get out and played an insane round of golf yesterday. You would have all been very impressed. I was drenched and just practically running around the golf course, trying to find dry spots. Anyway, I mentioned how I often look at the science section of the New York Times on Tuesday mornings to see if there's something about addiction, and I maybe shouldn't have done that this morning because it's like, the corruption of our government is infiltrating into the science world. But not to worry, at least not to worry for the next hour. We'll try not to worry. We'll try to be present and engaged with our experience and practice wisdom and compassion. And then after that, we can get pissed off again. But we'll just try to have like a little period of calm here. I've been well. I won't give away the talk. Just say that it has something to do with mindfulness, which may shock you all. So, a welcome, and we are going to sit for about 20 minutes, and then I'll talk for a little while, and then we'll see what happens after that, or if anything happens after that. I had fantasies of French toast as I was lying in bed last night, so I had to carve up some of the old baguette. I'm sorry, I shouldn't be. I'm probably triggering people's eating disorders. So anyway, I had to quickly make that this morning to get that fantasy taken care of. Okay, really important things sharing here. We're here to really practice Dharma and recovery. To reflect on that intersection. And so the beginning of that will be a period of meditation. So just settling back into your meditation posture, however that's most effective for you. If possible, upright is recommended but not required. You can lie down if need be, and take care of your body. You can also close your eyes, or if you're not comfortable with your eyes closed, you could just lower your gaze so you don't have to look at the screen. Just listen, or even don't listen, just practice mindfulness. So turning the attention inward. Starting by just feeling how you're holding your body, the sensations in the body, the energy, the life force moving through the body. And feeling any points of tension and seeing if you can relax around that, softening the belly, releasing the shoulders, loosening the jaw. So we can intentionally let go of these physical forms of tightness or tension, and those sometimes will help the mind or the nervous system to settle a bit. Working from there, perhaps we could say from the outside inward, can also work from the inside outward. Here we use the breath. Feeling the movement of the breath, the sensations around the nostrils, the sensations around the chest and belly. And so this initial aspect of practice is meant to stabilize the attention a bit, to focus the mind in a way that allows you to see when thoughts arise, when so-called distractions arise, and to then return again to the present moment, to the sensations of breath, to the body. New movements of mind, thoughts, intention are natural. The mind is trained to think, to project, to recall. In this practice, we learn to let go of those movements, bring the attention back to the present moment. This is called a training the attention. In any training, there's a great deal of mistakes or failings, and we don't expect to perfect our attentional training. Thus, we bring patience. Spaciousness, kindness, understanding, and persistence. We don't set ourselves up in a battle with our own minds, but gently guided to come back to the present over and over. And the first task of our practice is to just learn to return, to notice when the mind wanders, and then automatically come back to the breath. Once we have established that habit, it can be helpful to notice the feelings associated with each of these stages of practice. How does it feel when you realize the mind has wandered? How is the body, the nervous system, the mind reacting? And then how does it feel when you return, when you settle back onto the breath again? This then gives us a picture of the effects of the wandering mind and of the settled mind, which increases our motivation to practice, to train, to be present. We see that the dukkha, the agitation or disturbance that comes with the grasping of the mind, and we see the release, the comfort, the pleasant settling that comes with being focused on the present moment. This then becomes the motivation behind our practice. Okay, then. I've been looking and reflecting on the Satipatthana Sutta, which is the Four Foundations of Mindfulness. And it's a text, of course, that I've studied and read and thought about quite a bit over many years. And there are multiple books written about it, and so it's always interesting to come back to a text. And it's what in the great religious texts we could say always bring seem to be new, or there's something new that we find in them each time we return to them. And that points to the fact that the text has not changed. It is my mind that is different, and my ability to understand, or the things that are particular, excuse me, a particular interest to me or to you when you're doing that. We can even have those moments where we go, oh my God, I've read this so many times, and I never noticed that before. Of course, I know it happens to people with the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous and other recovery texts. And I'm not having any great revelations this time, unfortunately. But what struck me as I'm going through the Satipatthana, which is, if you're looking for it, it's in the middle-length discourses called the Majjhima Nikaya, and it's the 10th discourse in there. So Majjhima Nikaya 10. There's also a longer version of it in the longer discourses. I'm not sure, it might be 22. I'm not sure of the number in there, but it's easy to find. It's called the Maha Satipatthana Sutta, which means the greater Satipatthana. So it's got some extra material. But the one that people usually refer to is the one in the Majjhima Nikaya. And so, as I've been going through it, what struck me is that the things that the Buddha has us point, looking at in there are not what I would call personal. So I think that one of his projects, I mean, we know that one of his projects is to help people to see through the illusion of self, or the idea of self, or to at least to let go of clinging to self and to identity and to things that are I, me, and mine. And we don't have to sort of adopt or take on a belief system that there is no self. That's not the point. It's really, as with everything the Buddha teaches, ultimately about seeing how our relationship to the idea of self causes us suffering, and that when we let go of that relationship, or change that relationship, that we can let go of that suffering. So it's not a philosophy or a belief system, but an experiential practice. So just to go through, and for those who are not familiar with the four, one little refresher. The four foundations of mindfulness are body, and then feeling tone, mind states, and then the fourth is very difficult to define, sometimes called phenomena, or bhikkhu-bodhi sometimes calls its mind objects. Sometimes the term isn't even translated, it's just dhammas, which the same word as dharma, but in the Pali language, but with a small d, meaning it's not the ultimate truth, but it's these elements of truth, we might say, or elements of reality. But when we hear, particularly the first three, body, feeling, tone, mind states, We can kind of think about them as like, oh, this is, I'm looking at myself in a way. I'm be aware of my body. I'm aware of my feelings. I'm aware of my mind states. But then, the way the Buddha brings out these three, particularly, and I'll talk about the fourth as well, but is that it's very hard to take any of these as I, me, or mine. For instance, when he presents the idea of mindfulness of the body, the first thing he says is be aware of your breath. Well, there's nothing personal about our breath. But then he goes through different aspects like posture and then the elements here. And here we really see how he's pointing us away from taking things personally, saying your body is made up of these four classical elements, earth, air, fire, and water. And that we should think about our body, our experience of our body in those terms, which are is very impersonal. They're just these elements that exist in everything in just varying degrees. And we can, they're defined a little bit more, but just to understand that we're talking about solid things, liquid things, the temperature of things, the fire, and then the movement of things, the air element. So he's pointing us to just experience the body, not my body, and seeing that everything he talks about in there is universal to every human body, certainly. And then feeling tone, I often talk about this, where he's just saying, I'm not, he's not saying, how are you feeling? It's not what's your mood. It's just the pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral quality associated or experienced with each of the six senses, the five bio physical senses, and the mental sense. So this again becomes very systematic, just kind of taking it apart. And is it pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral? It's not, that's, again, it isn't my feeling. I'm not having this feeling that I'm going to share with you. It's just, it's pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. And there's reasons why he wants you to focus on that, because it's those three that trigger greed, hatred, and delusion. Pleasant triggers greed, unpleasant triggers hatred or aversion, neutral triggers delusion or ignorance or not paying attention. And so again, he's not, it's not like, how are you doing? And I want you to think about yourself. It's just like, watch how things unfold. Watch how you have sensations, how there are sensations, how there are feelings that trigger movements of mind. So then the third foundation is mind objects or mentals. I'm sorry, not mind states, mental states, or and that we can flip it around, say states of mind, which might be an easier term to understand. But again, it's very, very impersonal. It's not about your thoughts, which is a very interesting thing about the foundations of mindfulness. For in our culture, if we were going to talk about being mindful of our experience, and we talk about these things a lot, we'd be talking about our emotions and our thoughts. Those are the things that are kind of, we, I think, are most interested in, and yet the Buddha never actually refers to either of those things as particularly in the sense of the way that we think about them in modern Western psychology and just our concept of life. The mind states of mind is just, first of all, is your mind, is there greed, hatred, or delusion is your in your mind? Are you concentrated? Or is your mind spaced out? And then it resolves to, like, is your mind liberated? Is it free of any clinging? So it's just sort of like, what's the state of mind right now? So it's this almost like before pre like pre, it's not. I'm thinking of it as like it's like foundational. So we say it's the foundations of mindfulness. That's not quite the same idea here, but these are like the foundations out of which we build the idea of self, our experience of our body, our feelings, our mind states, and then we tell stories about them, and then we have emotions about them. But before all of that happens, there are just these raw, bare experiences of body, of feeling tone, of states of mind. So I think he's really trying to get us to make this shift from the I, me, mine version of the world and of experience of the world into this impersonal relationship to the world. And let me just say that this isn't, I'm not suggesting that you should not have a personal relationship with the world, or that you shouldn't have, that you shouldn't experience I, me, and mine. Those are just normal aspects of how we function in the world. And I'm not going to speak for the Buddha. I'll speak for myself, which is to say that we can set up these ideals of, oh, I'm supposed to be like this completely, not self. I don't believe it. I won't use the word I anymore or something. But to me, that's not the idea as much as seeing that there's an imbalance, that we are overly focused on I, me, and mine, and that we can get more balance in our life experience if we can remember from time to time each day that, oh, that's just one perspective. There's another way to see all this. And so I think of it again as the middle way. I say again because it's a term that comes up so often. So a kind of a balance between letting go of identifying and just realizing that identifying happens and has a function in the world and is useful. So in any case, that's just, my little commentary on that. So when we get to the fourth foundation of mindfulness, it steps away from any kind of selfing. It goes through a series of teachings, and Bhikkhu Bodhi says that this is essentially a developmental process that's being described here. It starts by being aware of the five hindrances: desire, aversion, restlessness, sleepiness, doubt. And those are the obstructions to clarity, to concentration, not to mindfulness per se, but that the clarity of mindfulness, I'll just say. In any case, five hindrances are something we can take up, one of the most popular Dharma talks around, probably. In any case, with the fourth foundation, the Buddha is saying, first of all, abandon or let go of these five hindrances. You're going to need to do that in order to cultivate wisdom. Once you've settled the mind enough, the mind and body enough, to be clear and somewhat undistracted, start to investigate these two areas of experience. Five aggregates, which are the elements of experience that trigger a sense of self, and the six sense bases, which are the areas of experience that trigger craving. So he's getting now to, his agenda, which is suffering is caused by craving for sense pleasure and craving for a self. And these two ways of looking at experience, and this is so much of what the Buddha seems to talk about, is like, how are you looking at your experience? How are you understanding what's happening to you? So the five aggregates, six sense bases, which I'm not going to go into right now, But let's just say that they are doorways into insight about how suffering arises. So we've let go of the hindrances and now we investigate these things. And once we get a clarity and insight into how we create suffering, how we create ego, then the seven factors of awakening start to mature. And this is, you can just tell by the name of it, the seven factors of awakening. Oh, that's probably a good thing. they're very familiar things. There's mindfulness, investigation, energy, joy, tranquility, concentration, equanimity. But it's these wholesome qualities that then, when we let go of the hindrances and we start to have insight, then these qualities naturally grow. It's not that we have to make them pump them up somehow. They naturally come as we abandon the hindrances, as we cultivate and see, cultivate insight and start to see how things work and let go of the causes of suffering. Then these factors arise, and when they are mature, then the fulfillment and full understanding of the Four Noble Truths arises. And so those are the things in the fourth foundation to mindfulness. You can see it's complicated, right? I don't expect anybody to memorize any of this, although it's worth looking at the sutta for yourself or looking at some of the books, and I'll mention a couple of those in a moment. But so the fourth foundation of mindfulness starts with seeing the hindrances, abandoning the hindrances, having insight into the aggregates and the sense bases, that then that insight develops the seven factors of awakening, and then the four foundations of mindfulness. So it's this progressive process. And once again, none of this refers to I, me, or mine, or to a self. It's just awakening to the truth of the way things are, to the way Ajahn Chah defines the Dharma, awakening to the truth of the way things are. This is the underlying reality of the world that we exist in. Our ordinary of way of operating is an overlay onto this underlying reality. It's a functional overlay, but it's not the truth with the capital T. It's just a relative way of operating and functioning in the world. And the problem with that overlay is that it creates suffering, ultimately, that it's an unsatisfactory way of engaging the world. It's functional, but it doesn't lead to the end of suffering. And yet it promises that. The idea that, oh, if I get all the toys and I get, all the pleasures and all the power, then I'm going to be satisfied, then I'm going to be happy, then I'm going to be free. And we know that that simply doesn't work. So the Buddha has this, other way, these different way of approaching our lives, our engagement with life, and we could say our motivation. We're on a different path than the path of grasping and the path of accumulation and the path of power and pleasure. We're on the path of freedom, which is a path of letting go. So I know that was a whole lot thrown in there in about 20 minutes. I hope it's of some benefit, and I will note that this is recorded. So if you wanted to go back and think about it some more, you can do that after we put it out. So I said I was going to mention some of the books about this. So Joseph Goldstein's book is called Mindfulness, a great, very readable collection. Or, well, not collection, but it is kind of a collection of talks. But anyway, it's just about the Four Foundations of Mindfulness. And it's actually his own take, or his own response to the Venerable Anālio's book called Satipatthana, the direct The Direct Path, I think, is the subtitle. But Satipatthana, which is a much more scholarly work, it's for the for you if you've studied a lot of suttas and been practicing for decades and gone on long retreats, then you like to read footnotes. Sometimes the footnotes take up more than the regular text on some of the pages. But an incredible book, and really one that was very influential in the Dharma world when it came out a little over 20 years ago. So Satipatthana by Bhikkhu Bodhi, Mindfulness by Joseph Goldstein. And then there's an older book, Bhante Gunaratana, also known as Bhante G, called Mindfulness. Somebody help me here. It's like it's got a something about easy mindfulness. Anyway, I'll think of it, unless somebody else thinks of it first. So yeah, if you're interested in studying the sutta or studying, the really get into what is mindfulness, because it's interesting that this is such a popular topic, and yet very little of what I just talked about is understood in the secular mindfulness world, which is much more about, oh, just be present and breathe or something like that. But it's quite, when you get into it, it's one of the things that's challenging about studying Buddhism. You hear the basic Buddhist teachings, or you hear some talk or some little, and you're like, oh, that's really great, I want to learn more. And then you start to look at it, it's like, wait, what? And it becomes much more complicated, and really takes some time. And as I say, I've been reading this text for a long time, and this way of reading it is not brand new for me, but kind of came together as a whole more or less recently. And as I say, that particular text I've looked at for over 30 years. So it's a journey. So I will open it up. I thank you for your attention, and see if there are any questions or comments or corrections, debates, digressions, other issues. Since I didn't really talk about addiction, but I will just simply say that addiction is certainly about trying to satisfy the this and to satisfy I, me, and mine. And when we realize that I, me, and mine, A, don't exist, and trying to satisfy them causes suffering, we realize, oh, addiction's probably not going to work. That is my conclusion. Addiction doesn't work, except at, getting you addicted. So, thoughts, questions, comments? Anybody want to raise their virtual hand or any kind of hand?
So, Kevin, I just wanted to just say that I think, I appreciate your talks so much. And the reason is that you provide so many different levels of me entering into the topics. In other words, you keep it simple, but at the same time, you say, well, look, if you want to go further into this, here's some ways you can do it. And you actually bring them into it, and I part of me is like, well, just like what you said, what I don't know what he's talking about. But you also give me the way to, if I want to, dig into it. And I it's just a great just a great thing. Just wanted to say that. So
Thanks,
thanks.
John. Well, my sense of how a talk like this probably lands is that As I'm saying things, you're going, yeah, right. And then when it's over, you're like, what did he say? Because it's a lot. So I feel like, I think it's pretty clear what I'm saying, but it might be hard to hold it all together and recall it all, which is again why I do encourage you to study, because this is, I'm always studying, and I'm supposed to be the teacher here. If you want to, develop your own practice, and it's really wise to, and it's not like there's some particular book or something that you should read. Just pick up whatever draws you, whatever's speaking to you. Whether it's Tara Brach, or Jack Kornfield, Joseph Goldstein. I mean, obviously these are the insight meditation, or Pema Chodron, or people not in the insight tradition. Great. Just be reading, just be studying. Certainly over these many decades, I've read so many different books and dipped into many different viewpoints that all inform my understanding. Yeah.
Well,
Steve,
it's
go ahead.
fascinating. You don't seem to ever get bored. I'm sure you do at some point along the way, but you really do seem, totally engrossed in the subject. So that's great.
Yeah, interesting. I will say that I might make it sound as if I spend my days immersed in a library of Dharma. The truth is that a few minutes of study, like, is plenty. Dharma is so rich, it's like I can't eat that whole pound of chocolate. I know, sorry. But just for example, a couple nibbles of really good, high quality dark chocolate, that's good, and a little bit of Dharma, and then what happens is that when I'm writing, which usually I am, I get to somewhere where I'm like, wait, I need to go look at that, and then when I go look at it, I'm like, oh wait, there's something I didn't notice before, and so it's. Yeah, it's a gradual process. It's not the huge, I spend most of my time doing other things, but a little bit goes a long way. Yeah, and that's why I think people appreciate my Daily Reflections book, because it gives you something each day. It's not like the whole of the Dharma you're not taking on. It's just like one topic to take on each day as a theme. Which is a great way to practice as well, to find a daily theme of practice. Steve J.
Well, my screen just dimmed, so my battery must be getting low. I just wanted to make the comment that, years ago when I started this, I tried to do the Satipatthana Sutta by, Anallio, and
No.
I got through a quarter of it, and I went, well, I can't read this. But I
No.
will say for everybody, I've read Joseph Goldstein's book, Mindfulness, and it's by far the best thing I have ever read in terms of learning all these things that you're teaching. I have a brain that just doesn't remember anything. I've been
Yeah.
this way all my life. I've read hundreds of books. So I have to do this daily. Every single day I have to pick up something or I go to Be Here Now and listen to Ram Dass lectures, or read your daily readings. And every single day I just have to take a little bit after meditation so I can stay focused on the Dharma, because it's the truth. It's what's helping me live my life. But yeah, I would highly recommend that mindfulness book. It's very good.
Thanks, Steve. So I'll say a couple things. One is that when you read Dharma, what you're able to understand is the level to which your own practice or your own insight has reached. If you ha there are Dharma teachings that I can't understand because my practice hasn't evolved to that stage. And so when you read something and it resonates for you, it's because you're there.
Right.
You're already there. It's not that you're learning, something's being encapsulated for you, but your mind, you've experienced it somehow. You have some recognition of it.
Right.
And in terms of remembering, I think you hit on it too. It's just one thing each day. And I mean, we have one th first of all, there's one thing we always want to remember, which is try to be present right now, right? And then out of that, oh, what am I aware of? Well, there it happened. Maybe there's something I'm pointing to today, like I'm trying to be more aware of loving kindness, or I'm trying to be more aware of impermanence, or I'm trying to be more aware of equanimity, of staying balanced, whatever. Just one thing, it's fine, right? Like we can't be thinking about the whole of the Dharma as we walk around every day. Okay, what the five aggregates, the six sense bases, the seven facts of awakening. I'm like, you'd fall over, your head would get too heavy. But yeah, just if we try to be present and then have maybe one theme to go along with that, or see what emerges with out of the presence, that's really the practice for me. Yeah.
That's good advice. Thanks, Kevin.
Yeah, thanks, Steve. We have a couple minutes left. People are unusually quiet today. And what usually happens is that when there's 1 minute left, four people decide that they want to raise their hand real quick. So we're not going to tolerate that today. There are limits where there should be. Okay, well, let me see if I can, if there are any advertising I need to do. Monica, have you put anything in, or am I not looking at, oh, I see, I wasn't looking at the, it's like the chat thing changed, right? The app. Thanks, Zoom. It's always so helpful. Did you put in the thing about, oh boy, you got all the Satipatthanas, the seven factors. Did you happen to put in the retreat in April that I'm doing with Paula? The retreat in,
Yes, it's at the bottom. It's
great, great. Yeah, that's,
Paula Snow and the Shelterwood Collectives.
yeah. That's, the one I'm, encouraging people to, because
Come and camp.
the retreat next week is pretty full. Although, Abigail, I'm so sorry you're not going to make it.
Oh no.
Yeah, okay. So maybe there is a spot open. So if there's somebody who wants to last minute try to get in the retreat, you can write to Greg. But that retreat in April should be really beautiful up in Casadero. And it's more of a camping retreat, and think make it a little more affordable perhaps than some. And anyway,
Are
that's
you
the next
camping?
one. What's that?
Are you camping too?
There, yes, there will be camping. They have camping.
Oh, is it set up, or are you bringing your stuff?
Oh no, I don't camp. That's not, no. That's, not my style. Sorry. But they do have, like, that's, it's kind of set up for camping there. They have, I think they have some tents, and you can bring tents or whatever. You'd have to look at the website. And what else? Starting March 1st, Vimalasara, no, March 2nd. Well, whatever. First Tuesday in March. First Monday in March. Hello. Yes. Speak. Okay. Yes, it is March 2nd. Vimalasara and I are co-teaching a course online for the Barry Center for Buddhist Studies. It's the usual stuff. We're calling it the Truth of Recovery, something like that. So I think that's the Four Noble Truths. But and it's 6 o'clock on the East Coast, 3 o'clock on the West Coast. It's on my website. Yeah, a few other things, but I think that's enough advertising for the moment. So I will say adieu. I will be back here next Tuesday, right before we leave for the retreat. And I know some of you will be there. I look forward to seeing everybody. And otherwise, I'll see you online. Many thanks. You can say goodbye too if you
Goodbye, if you want.
want.
Thank you so
Ooh.
much.
Thanks so
Thank
much,
you, Kevin.
Kevin.
Say good
Thanks,
night,
Kevin.
Dick. Good night, Dick.
Thank you, Kevin.
I'll be in the air.
Thank you,
I'll
Kevin.
see
All
you.
right.
Thanks.
Okay.
Thank you so
Thanks, you
much.
I will be at that retreat next week
Oh,
with
good.
the
Oh,
ladies.
Carolyn, you're coming out here? Oh, very good.
Yeah, that's why I'm being silent.
Yeah, no, well, yeah. Yeah, you're on the East Coast, aren't you?
Yes, North Carolina.
Right, so you're flying out for that, huh?
Yes,
Okay, well,
yes.
I think you'll enjoy Greg. You haven't sat with Have you sat with Greg? Oh yeah, at
Yes,
Southern
the first
Dharma.
retreat 2 years
Right.
ago. Yes, first
Okay.
time I met you, both of y'all.
Right. Well, as I said, bring your raincoat and your boots. At least
Thank
you won't need your snow gear
you.
though. So.
Please no, please no. No more just no.
Yeah, it's been a bad winter, man. Oof.
It's cold, very
Yeah.
cold,
Yeah.
cold.
Well, it'll be nice to see you.
Thank you.
All right, folks. I'm going to end the meeting for all.